straightened all my problems out that I had before with this word, because almost every lexicon and every translation that I have found translates it incorrectly. Even the Greek lexicons translated incorrectly, and I had to study the history of the word and how it was put together and how it was used and the customs of the time before I could finally decipher the situation. We'll get into that in a minute. Do you have any Bible questions?
I was going through that doctrine book you gave us.
Uh-huh.
Now, which one's the Old Testament and New Testament? Which one is Hebrew?
Hebrew Old Testament.
Hebrew Old.
Uh-huh. And the Greek New Testament. And the Greek New Testament is Koine Greek. Koine Greek. Koine. Koine Greek is different. There's Old Greek. And the sixth letter of the Greek, Old Greek alphabet is that. Brother, I never told you this before.
No, you haven't. Hold it on me.
It's not always as you see it. As you go on further and study a little bit more. This was an ancient letter, and it's like a vowel. Vowel. It's like this. That's how you translated it. And it's very much like the Hebrew, Semitic. Okay? But that letter is dropped. That was alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, vowel. Zeta. That's where it was. Okay, that's where it was. I just thought I'd throw that one in there for you and some of you that are studying Greek. And that is a dropped and a forgotten. The Greek language has changed and evolved over time. Old Greek, in the what they call the dialects, the Ionic and Hellenistic times, it was different than it was later. Then the Septuagint was translated when the Hebrews forgot their language. And they were dispersed throughout the world when they were carried away in the Babylonian captivity and things. A lot of them forgot their language. Alexander the Great conquered the world, the known world at that time, and he introduced all the language of that whole world became Greek, and it was called Koine. Koine Greek, like that. Koine. That's a sharp A. Koine Greek. That was the language in his time. It was a common language. It was a legal language of the whole world at that time. And I don't know whether you know this or not. How many of you know Roman numerals? Some of you are old enough that they studied Roman numerals.
No.
You don't like that?
I never knew what the M and the C meant.
Okay. Mu, sigma, chi, iota. These are not Roman numerals. These are Greek numerals, Greek letters. All right? And at one time, some of the oldest manuscripts you're going to see, that sixth letter, which stands for six, in some of the oldest literature and things you'll see in time. That's where you'll see that number sixth letter, and it stood for six. And the beginning of the Roman numerals. See, all Western languages come from what language?
Greek.
All right. Greek evolved when the Septuagint was translated from Hebrew into Greek, so that the Jews could read their language, because a lot of them couldn't even read Hebrew at the time. It was a forgotten language, basically. It was a dead language for a while. Hebrew was. They still spoke and used words and things, but they didn't really. And sometimes they would say prayers. People say prayers in some language. You can learn a prayer in a language without knowing what that language is. Yeah, in Latin, you can learn that. But they translated about 300 B.C., the Hebrew was translated into Greek. And when Jesus quoted the Bible, he very seldom ever quoted Hebrew because they didn't know what he was saying. And he quoted the Septuagint, which was a Greek translation of the Hebrew Scriptures. And one of the very special examples of that is when he was on the cross of Calvary and he said, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani. And what is that?
My God,
Why hast thou forsaken me? He's quoting what?
Psalm
22 and verse 1 in Hebrew. And they said he's calling for Elijah. They couldn't even understand what they didn't understand what he even said. They didn't know enough Hebrew to even understand. Paul the Apostle was a Hebrew speaking Jew, a Pharisee, but very few of them. He said, I was a Hebrew of Hebrews, and that's enough word. They spoke Hebrew in his home, which was a rarity. Okay? All right, the Hebrew.
Thanks, speaking Greek at home.
Okay. From 330 BC to 300 and about 30 AD, Greek was the common language of the whole world. That's 600 or 700 years. That was the common language of the whole world. After that, the Catholic Church, so they could make the scriptures cryptic. What does that mean?
Unknown
to the common man. They changed the language to Latin because the common man did not know Latin. And the scriptures then were translated into Latin and not Greek. Of course, Baptists kept on preaching in Greek all the time, all down through the ages.
The majority of people, do they still speak at that time? The majority of people in the 4th century, do they still speak Greek?
Remember, from 300 B.C. all the way over to 300 A.D.,
mm-hmm.
actually 331 and 300 and 331, that was the common language of the whole world.
Okay.
Even the Roman coins were not printed in Latin. They were printed in Greek. All of the vegetable stands and everything that you saw, so they'd have a medium of...
So that was instituted by Alexander the Great. Right?
Yes, Alexander the Great.
No wonder.
And when the Roman Empire came along, after his empire busted up, when the Roman Empire came along, the Romans were so taken by the Greek culture that they became Greeks. They adopted the culture and the religions and everything. All of it. How many of you knew that? All right. Matthew, we're going to go to the book of Matthew today. I'm going to. Some of you do not have the parables class, so I'm going to give this to you. I'm going to show you something.
That's a lot of reading in the little handout that you gave. It takes a lot of reading.
Which one? Oh, the Greek language?
No, this was on the parables.
Oh, the parables, yes. It's 20. And verse 13.
20 and 13?
20 and verse 13. Actually, it starts on up above this, where this talks about rewards. Let me read this to you real quick. Then Peter answered and said to him, Behold, we have left everything and followed. This is 19 and verse 27. Everything and followed you. What will then there be for us? And Jesus said to them, Truly I say to you that you who have followed me in the regeneration by being born again, when the Son of Man will sit on his glorious throne, you shall sit upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. Boy, doesn't that straighten out the book of Revelation a lot right there? Some of the interpretation. And who's commenting here?
Jesus.
Well, do you think he's an authority?
Yeah.
I'd say the absolute ultimate authority, wouldn't you? And everyone who has left houses, brothers, sisters, or father, or mother, or children, or farms, for my sake, shall receive many times as much, and shall inherit eternal life. But many who are first will be last, and the last shall be first. Now, I want you to understand that that is something that's very true. A lot of people that we see that are prominent, that we think in the last, you know, in the resurrection, that are going to be prominent or not going to be prominent because they got a lot of their glory right here. Okay, and that's a fact that Jesus is commenting on. Okay, I won't go into that because we've got another rabbit to chase. Well, the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard, and when he had agreed with the laborers for a denarius, in other words, the word denarius there means a day's wages. Okay, that was a coin that typified a day's wages at that time.
What verse were you on?
In 20 and verse 2.
Okay.
And he went out about the third hour, okay, and saw others standing idle in the marketplace. Now he's starting up here at 6 o'clock in the morning, then 9 o'clock, and then noon, and 3 o'clock, and then just before quitting time. And the working day at this period of time was 12 hours. There wasn't any 8-hour working days. It was 12-hour working days. Okay? And those, he said, you go into the vineyard, and whatever is right, I will give to you. And so they went. And again, he went out in the sixth and the ninth hour and did the same thing. And about the 11th hour, he went out and found others standing. And he said to them, why have you been standing here idle all day long? And they said, because no one has hired us. And he said to them, you go to into the vineyard. And evening had come, and the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, call the laborers and pay them for the wages, beginning with the last group to the first. And when those hired by the, in the 11th hour came, and that's what, 5 o'clock. This is just before quitting time, wasn't it? 6 o'clock is quitting time, this is 5 o'clock. Okay, he hired them at 5 o'clock. And he hired, the 11th hour came, each one received a day's wages. That's how you have to translate that, okay? And when those hired first came, they thought that they would receive more. And they received each one a day's wages. And when they received it, they grumbled at the landowner, saying, these last men have worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have become the burden and the scorching, who have borne the burden and the scorching heat of the day. But he answered and said unto them, Friend. All right. Marilyn, remember that word? What's that word in Greek? Do you remember? Yeah. That's the word right there. It's in English, it is like that, hetairos. That's a rough reader on that epsilon there. Hetairos. That's a, that word, you can chase it all through history, all back through the different dialects, the Greek and everything else, and you'll find out that it most of the time it meant comrade or friend. But how did it get to mean that? Have you ever met somebody and you didn't know their name and you gave them a greeting? What did you say?
Howdy, friend.
Howdy, friend. Are they really your friend? You don't even know their name, so you say friend. Yeah. Or you say, hi, mister. Hi, sir. How you doing? You know, you walk up to them and just say, hi, sir, hi, mister, hi, friend, and you don't know them. You use that word because you don't know their name. Now, how much do you think this landowner knew these guys he hired just that morning? Do you think he knew all their names?
No.
No. He said in them, stranger, mister, fella. That's what he said. Put this one down, because I'll tell you what, you've really got deep in the Greek to even get this one. you've got to check the dialects and Liddell and Scott and all through the vocabulary and the customs of the times, because most of the lexicons are even wrong. They just take what somebody else said. And you have to go and check the customs of the people. This was a form of greeting, and it's usually a tirade. Because that's the vocative case, isn't it? Not only generally the oblative, vocative, instrumental, they refuse even vocative. Vocative is a case of what? That's the last one. A case of address. When you talk to somebody, say, hi, Bill! All right? Hi, Bill. That's vocative. See? And this term used here, at Tyre, it means, hi, fella. Hi, stranger. How you doing? And now Jesus, look at the term, the way that Jesus is looking, using this term. You can put down there, not friend, but stranger, fellow. Don't know who you are. Sometimes in ancient history, it was used as a lewd person. Someone with questionable character. A stranger. We're going to trace it in three places in the New Testament. Right here, look at this just a little bit, okay?
In the King James, it's a capitalized friend.
Yeah. Well, see, that's capitalized. It means it's the start of the sentence. Okay? Just, he started talking to him, and this is a quotation. Okay? But it's not friend. It should have been translated stranger, or mister, or sir, or whoever, however you would address somebody that you don't know. Okay?
It would be some sort of, probably in English, some sort of noun, wouldn't it? Here.
Well, it's kind of it's a pronoun or something that takes the place of a noun or a noun or whatever. You know, you can, it's something, and you would say, I'd say, Ken, Levi, I don't know. If I didn't know your name, I'd say, hello, buddy. You know, I mean, hello, buddy. And that's exactly what this term means. Because it meant hello, buddy. Sometimes they'd say, hello, buddy. Hello, stranger. Or hello, friend. Or whatever you want to say. But now let's look at the gravity, how it changes when it's translated correctly. Hello, friend. Or friend. Or stranger. Or false friend. Sometimes you could translate it false friend. Now, the landowner had befriended these people because he had given them a job, hadn't he? And so, you know what? God tells us to be thankful that we can work and that we have a job. Everybody's always looking forward to retiring, but that's foreign to the Bible, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really foreign. What a man looked forward to in that time was the ability to get up and go out and make a wage and earn. And to have a job to do that too. Okay? I mean, you can be healthy and everything else, but if you don't have a job, you're still. But this man should have been thankful, but what did he do? But he answered and said unto one of them, friend, am I doing you no wrong? Did you agree? You signed a contract to me to work for a day's wages. Didn't he? He did. Now, did he do him wrong? Didn't do him wrong. Okay? Take what is yours and go your way. But if I wish to give to this last man the same as you, is it not lawful for one for me to do what I wish with what I is my own? Or is your eye envious? Evil.
Jesus came face to face with the union steward.
Yeah. Came face to face with Judas. This man was not thankful. Is your eye evil? Is your eye envious because I am generous? Thus the last shall be first and the first last. There is a real meaning. Do you see Jesus repeating this term again? Remember what I told you about rewards? We're talking about rewards and judgment now. Now let's go on a little bit further to 22 and verse 12. We're looking at a wedding feast. Now, we're looking at the wedding feast. And Jesus answered and spoke to them again in parables, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like compared to a king who gave a wedding feast for his son. And he sent out all his slaves to call those who had been invited to the wedding feast, and they were unwilling to come. And again he sent out other slaves, saying, tell those who have been invited, behold, I have prepared my dinner, and my oxen, my fattened livestock, and all butchered, and everything is ready. Come to the wedding feast. But they paid no attention, and went their way, one to his own farm, and another to his own business. And the rest seized his slaves, and mistreated them, and killed them. But the king was enraged and sent his armies and destroyed those murderers and set their city on fire. Then he said to his slaves, the wedding feast is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy. Go therefore to the main highways, as many as you find there, and invite to the wedding feast. And those slaves went out into the streets and gathered together all they found, both evil and good, and the wedding hall was filled with dinner guests. But when the king came to look over the dinner guests, he saw there a man not dressed in wedding clothes. And he said to him, what's that translated?
Fellow.
Huh?
Stranger.
How's it translated?
His friend. Friend. Capital friend.
Capital friend. Well, that's again the case. He's starting a new sentence, so it's capitalized. All right? Mm-hmm. How should it be translated?
Sir?
Stranger. Mister. Mm-hmm. Hey, mister. Come here. Somebody was walking out in my backyard. This reminds me of this the other day. Somebody walking across the back of our yard, and Merrill hollered out the door, what do you want?
That's a strange thing.
I mean, he was a stranger to you, wasn't he?
Yeah.
What do you want? What are you doing, fella?
Same passage.
How did you come in here without wedding clothes? And he was speechless. Stranger. Vile man. How did this hobo get to my dinner? How did this bum get in here past the door guard. That's what he says. Then the king said to the servant, bind him hand and foot and cast him into the outer darkness. In that place there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Boy, for many are called, but few are chosen. We're going to get into that later on. Okay? That's a little bit more. I can't teach all of my parable class to you at one time. Alright? Now, go to Matthew, the 26th chapter, and this is going to be very, very enlightening. Matthew 26 and verse 50.
You know, Jim, in a Sunday school class that I have, there was a man saved at age 87. And I came to him and I told him what his probability was. And it was one in close to a million at his age. But this guy was so happy after that.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm telling you.
Well, it might.
A life transformed even at that age.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing over.
I baptized a man. He was close to 100, I think, 90-something. You remember him?
Yeah.
Ron Armstrong? He was a happy guy. He was happy. He was close to 100. Why, he had a 1949 or 50 Lincoln Continental that he was driving to the church. That was when he retired. In that car. If you can imagine that one. All right.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I went to visit him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he lived out there on the knee.
Matthew, the 26th chapter, starting with verse 47. We have to, the reason why we're doing this is the Bible isn't divided as well as it should be. Some of your new translations and study guides will tell you where the subject begins and where it ends in each chapter and verse. And somebody just divided in chapters and verse. And in all reality, many times, the Bible starts a chapter where it shouldn't start, and whatever, you know, the divisions that we have. They're not, these divisions are not inspired of God. The original language is inspired of God.
Scofield did a lot of work in dividing that.
Yeah. This was, he did a better job than the person that originally divided it in chapters and versions.
Yeah.
And anyway, my translation here, and by the way, I'm reading to you in a revised New American Standard, okay? That's what I'm reading from, New American Standard, but I've revised it to kind of go along more with the original language. And verse 47, Matthew 26 and verse 47. And while he was still speaking, behold, Judas, one of the 12, came up. Now, who's Judas?
Judas Iscariot.
Judas Iscariot. What does the word Judas mean? Let's look at these things real good. That's the test time. Judas.
Judah.
It means Judah. Okay, Judas it should not have been translated Judas, but Judah. Because the word Judah in the Old Testament is the same as Judas in the New Testament. And also the same as Jude. Same word. The translators, as they translated incorrectly. Okay, what's some more examples of this?
Jesus
and Joshua are the same name. It should have not been Jesus, but Joshua. All right, which means Jehovah saved. Okay, those are the same one. What about another one?
Isaiah.
Uh-huh. But, yeah, Isaiah and Isaiah, they just didn't know how to...
John
and Jonah. John and Jonah are the same one. How about the word Jacob?
That was changed, wasn't it?
What's the word Jacob? What's that Jacob?
Israel.
What's Jacob's
Israel?
Name? Well, Jacob's it was Israel's name, but... Jacob. What does the name Jacob mean? We have a New Testament book of Jacob.
Confederate?
James.
James.
James and Jacob are the same one. So when they translate,
Elijah and Elijah.
Yeah, they get those mixed up. Sometimes the translators of King James will even get those two prophets mixed up because they didn't know how to translate it. So they'll say Elijah in one place where it should have been Elijah in another place. Okay. All right, so we can get that straightened out. Let's go back here now. Judas, the praise of God. And what does Iscariot mean? That's a Hebrew word. Ishkaroth. Ishkaroth. A man from Kerioth. Okay, that's what Iscariot means. All right. And he was still speaking. Behold, Judas, one of the 12, came up. The 12. Who's the 12? The 12 apostles. What does the word apostle mean? It comes from apo and stelo in Greek, doesn't it? Apostolos. What does it mean?
Chosen?
What was that word, apostolos? Our English word apostle comes right out of it. Okay.
Is apo from or above or something like that?
It's
from.
Stelo. Okay. Is that wrong? Stelo. I send. I send out with authority. One sent out with special authority. He was one of the apostles, one sent out with special authority. Jesus chose him. Now go back and think about the fellow over here that was thrown out in outer darkness. He was called, all right, and everything else, but it was not genuine, was it? Was Judas? Judas was called, and he was even ordained as an apostle, but was his conversion genuine?
No.
He was not a believer. He never was a believer. And Jesus called him a devil. All right? Let's go on down here a little bit further. Judas, one of the 12, came up accompanied by a great multitude of swords and clubs and the chief priests and the elders of the people. This is a mob. By the way, what does the word Nicodemus mean? Huh? Mob buster. Here's a mob. The word Nicodemus means mob buster or crowd controller. He's conquers a crowd or a mob of people. That's what the word Nicodemus means. Okay? And now he was chief priest and elders of the people. Now he was betraying him and gave them a sign saying, whomever I shall kiss, he is the one, seize him. And immediately he came to Jesus and said to him, hail, Rabbi. And the word is affectionately kissed him. That's what the word is. Kata and filio. He affectionately kissed him. He held on to him. And Jesus said unto him, friend, Nikairos, stranger. This is the same term that he used for the man that was at the wedding with no garment. Wasn't it? The same term. Go look it up. You don't have to take my word for it. Go look that thing up. Look those words up. The same one. Now, I used to think when I studied this, I said, something's different here. Something's wrong. Something, even I look in some of the lexicons and Benjamin Davids and everything, and it says philo, I mean friend, companion, comrade. All right? But that's not what it means. That's what it came to mean later. But it was a case of address for a stranger. Now just look at how Jesus addresses Judas. Different, isn't it? Was he his friend?
No.
He wasn't his friend. And in some places, according to Liddell and Scott, it's used as a vile person.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of where they said that many people will be doing things in the name of Jesus, but then Jesus will say, depart me from me, I never knew you.
I never knew you.
He's like saying, I know you.
See how it unfolds? Sometimes the original language is just unfold something. This has bothered me. I've been studying Greek for almost 40 years. And I just ran across and started chasing these roots. The other day when I was studying the parables, and I wished that I could share this with my teacher. Because I've never heard anybody teach it. All these years, I just discovered it. And started and chased it out. And now, when you understand the culture and the customs of the time, it makes a lot of difference. The woman that fell at Jesus' feet and washed him to his feet with her tears, and dried his feet with the hair of her head. What was she using? What was she probably using? A woman all of her life would catch her tears as she would cry at a wedding or a funeral and catch them in a bottle, and they would be buried with her as a cherished memento of all of the joys and sorrows of her life. She took and poured those, all of her sorrows and joys of her life, and washed Jesus' feet. And a woman would carry, I don't know if you know this, but have you ever been to museums, you see a hair bowl where women used to wear, Women used to brush their hair and take and put that hair in a bowl, and then they would braid little pieces like a little carpet or a little doily or watch chains or anything like that in ancient times. And that is probably, and it was one of the most, they would give this to their husband or their love when they were engaged to somebody. They would give this to them so they could have it with them at all times. Remember, if you ever saw the movie Josie Wales, that girl gave him a watch fob that was made from her hair. And that was a very common custom of those times. So you see how this is, and when you go back and you unfold the customs of the times, it means so much more.
So you're saying that she was not crying after
she probably was crying.
She was?
She was probably crying.
But she was pouring out her tears.
But she was pouring out her tears and wiping his, maybe with her hair of her head too, but more important was this cloth that she had made from her hair, which she was using it on his feet. His feet. Now that's the dirtiest part of your body, usually, when you're walking around in sandals like that. She was wiping his feet with this precious symbol of herself that she would give to her love or her husband one of these days or something.
Similar to Mary's 300 denarii bottle of oil.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was two times that was done, by the way. That was two different times. Okay, two different instances. And basically they did the same thing, nearly the same thing in both instances. But one of them had some costly perfume poured on him. Okay, and that was Mary, and she was a wealthy. Mary and Martha and Lazarus lived in Bethany. And they knew Jesus for almost all their lives. And Lazarus was his real good friend. And they were wealthy. They had a home there, which was, you know, if they were upper crust. And she took and broke a bottle of perfume and poured it on him. And Judas had a Calypso walleye fit.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't like it. Well, let's go over and look at here. And Jesus said to him, "Friend, do what you've come to do." Was it friend? Should it be friend? Stranger?
Stranger.
Stranger. Vile person? Fair weather friend is another translation.
Mm-hmm.
Fair weather. How about a fair weather friend? Fair weather friend. Have you got some fair weather friends?
They only like you when you're helping.
How many of you have ever met? How many of you have ever met Ted Tyros? You know, how many of you ever met this type of person, okay?
You meet a bunch of people, win a lot.
Jesus said unto him, "Ted Tyros, stranger, mister, I don't know you. I don't know you. I don't even know your name, though."
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
I was going to say, you know, the way Jesus said this to him is like the way he did it was a wrong way of doing it. His giving that kiss, I don't know if that was a part of that custom.
You know, I mean, oh, that was reserved for a bosom friend, like John was to him. I'm sure John, many times they came up, and if you look at people over in Europe and the Middle East, they kiss each other all the time. The men kiss each other. But he fervently, it says, cara phileo. He
did it in the wrong way sometimes.
Well, no. He kissed him all right, but he kissed him and held on to him.
Yeah.
So they could get him.
Why? A stranger and dream you give to a family member.
Yeah. A hug and a kiss and just somebody that you hadn't seen for a long time, you would just hold on to them.
Yeah.
Okay?
Very fake.
But it was fake, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was pure fake. He was a fair weather friend. He was a fake, a false friend.
Mm-hmm.
He was a stranger to him, really. A stranger. And Jesus said to him, "Stranger, false friend, vile person, do what you've come to do." And they came and laid hands on Jesus and seized him.
You know, to the outside world, when they would witness that, they would think that there's a close affection here between Jesus and Judas. And it would be similar to the wheat and the tares.
Yeah. Well, we studied that in the parables, the wheat and the tares. Jesus went out and sold wheat in the daylight, and the enemy went out and sold tares at night, and wheat and tares would just lie, don't they?
That's why they came to him at night, Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Darkness. And let's look and go back and think about Judas now. Judas had been with Jesus as long as anybody else had.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there are people that can go to church and fake it all their life and go to hell?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is an example of it right here.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know him. They don't know him. There's people that go to church for reasons. Especially in a large church like this. You have people go here because the sheriff is here.
Good for business.
The mayor. Good for business. I knew a man one time came up to me when I was pastoring, and he said, Jim, he said, I got some business cards made up, and he said, I saw that and this really is a really good thing. He said, makes people think you're honest and everything, and there's a little sign on it like that. He said, so I had my business cards made up like that, but he said, I don't go to church. And he said, I don't really know God, but he said, if it's good for my business, I want to go to church. And he said, not only that, he said, I want to join your church. And he said, I'll pay money to the church and everything else. But he said, and I'll be baptized and stuff. But he said, don't call on me to do anything spiritual at all. This guy was a jerk. He's telling me this. Making me like this. And I answered him.
You got to give him a little bit of merit because he was honest.
He was insulting me, and he was insulting God.
Sure. Yeah.
Insulting God.
Most people would have the gumption to come up and tell you that.
No. But he wanted to do it to debase the cause of Christ and to try to show me how cheap Christianity was. And he really meant it because he showed me the card. And I told him, I said, you know something? I said, I think you just may as well give up. I don't believe this, but you know, so I've been witnessing to you for years, and this is like water off a stuff's back. And I've come to the point today that I realize that God, you're not one of the elect, and God is not going to call you to salvation. You're just lost. And I said, we don't take lost people in our church. You have to be born again. That's one of the things you have to get up before the church. And at that time, this was a long time ago, you went up before the church and presented yourself to the church and told them that you had told them your experience of salvation and that you wanted to become a church member and to carry out the Great Commission through this body of believers. And I said, you can't do that.
Blasphemy.
Yeah, it's blasphemy. It's like blasphemy. And he looked at me like, his eyes got real big. He said, I said, you're damned. People like this. He was messing with me, so I threw some Bible back at him. Just a little bit. And it shocked him tremendously. He said, you mean to tell me that you won't let, if I give to your church and stuff, you won't let me come to your church and be a church member so I can put that thing on my card? I said, you come to church all the time you want to. But I said, there's requirements about being a member of one of God's churches. And I said, evidently you don't meet that requirement. You just don't come in and say that. But there are some that do that. Because Jesus exposes them in the parables that we see here today. And here is one exposed greatly. He doesn't call him brother. He doesn't call him friend. You know, in church membership, down through the dark ages and all, when they would meet each other, we didn't say Levi, we'd say brother, 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 brother. They called themselves brother and sister.
Family members.
All right. Family members. And what does the word brother mean, too, by the way? It means more than just brother. Adelphos and Adelphe, those two Greek words, it means from the same womb. You're from the same mother. That's what it means. You're from the same mother or from the same father, as we use the term brother and sister in church.
I'm going to ask you, the term that we use, brother and sister, all the time, is that you have your own family. They look at you strange when you tell somebody else, you know, your brother, you know, and they're your brother, you know, in flesh, you know. And they always look at you strange because of that. Why are you calling him brother? You're not your brother.
Well, that's...
And I mean, that's what they...
That's some of the little jewels that I ran across this last week. as I studied. And I told my wife, was it yesterday that I started telling you about this? I've been studying to look at this thing here, but I hadn't figured it all out yet. And I said, man, I just discovered something really neat. After all this, I mean, I learn all the time. If you study, you're going
to
learn.
Well, Jim, I have to say,
yes. That's the same thing. It's the same term. He could address him as false friend or hypocrite, couldn't he? Mm-hmm. False friend or hypocrite. We're in the book of Exodus. We'll go there. Do you have any questions concerning this thing at all? Any questions?
How many times that
word is used exactly three times. Kathairos is used three times in the New Testament, and you just saw it. That's all the use it has in the New Testament. And those three instances, it's very unusual, isn't it? It's so uncommon that the translators didn't know how to translate it, and they weren't looking at context either, or syntax. They were just looking at the word, and they said, well, this word means friend, so we'll just say comrade friend. But when you realize that it's a term that you use for somebody you didn't know, it was just a case of address for somebody stranger, hi stranger, hello fellow, hello mister. And sometimes, as you study Liddell and Scott, it is a term for a vile fellow, or a lewd man, or a lewd woman in times past. Somebody of questionable character that you did not know. All right? Exodus.
What chapter,
I'm seeing where I want to start here.
That's the end of
34. Yeah, we were at the end of 34. We saw here that Moses. By the way, who did the miracles before Pharaoh?
Aaron.
Moses didn't do that. I don't care what Cecil B. DeMille says. Moses did not perform those miracles. Aaron performed them. Okay, Aaron performed those miracles. Whose rod was thrown down?
Aaron's
rod was thrown down. Whose rod budded?
Aaron.
To prove that typified the resurrection, it was Aaron's rod. Okay, and if you look, it's Aaron's rod. Aaron did these things. Who was Moses? What part did Moses play? What part did Moses play? If Aaron did all this stuff, what part did Moses play during this?
He's talking to God.
He was God's go-between. He was the type of Jesus. All right? He was God's go-between. He says he will be a God to you. And he will stand there as the presence of God amongst you.
He's a priest.
All right? And that's what he was. He was typifying. As Jesus, when Jesus was on this earth, that was God on this earth walking in flesh. John 1:1, you know, we've translated that before. In the beginning kept on being the Word, the Jehovah. And the Word kept on being toward the God. And the Word kept on being God. Or the Jehovah kept on being God. Jesus never ceased being God while he was on this earth. Because God tasted what we had. All the temptations, all the feelings, all the hunger, all the misery, all the remorse of the depression, all of the betrayal that you experience. Look at what when he just said Hippolytus to Judas. How would you feel if somebody that you had been with for years had turned around and sold you out? How betrayed would you feel? My wife can experience that. She's had that done to her in her life and her family and things. How many of you do? You don't even have to name the times. But how many times has a family member just literally just shown her colors, as you call it? It hurts you so bad. Or a close friend. Or the person you worked with used you for a stepping stone to get up and cut your throat. This is the betrayal that we experience in this life. Jesus felt that. Now, Moses is coming down off of Mount Sinai in verse 29. came about when Moses was coming down from Mount Sinai, and the two tablets of testimony. And this testimony is the covenant, by the way. The berith, the covenant, the cutting, the covenant between God and man. There's some rules laid down in every contract, isn't there? And this contract that was drawn up for Israel and for these people was written in stone by God himself. Were in Moses' hand as he was coming down from the mountain, and Moses did not know that the skin of his face shone because of his speaking with him. He was in the presence of God, and he was glowing with the Shekinah glory of God when he walked down off of that mountain. So when Aaron and all the sons of Israel saw Moses, behold, the skin of his face shone, and they were afraid to come near him. Then Moses called them, and Aaron and all the rulers of the congregation returned to him, and Moses spoke to them. And afterward all the sons of Israel came near, and he commanded them to do everything that the Lord had spoken to him on Mount Sinai. When Moses had finished speaking with them, he put a veil over his face. A veil over his face. Why would somebody be afraid to come into the presence of God?
Huh?
Jesus tells his people today, in short form, and it's been said many times, be prayed up, paid up, and ready to go up. Don't be embarrassed by my coming. What embarrasses us?
Surprise.
Surprise. But what embarrasses somebody?
If they're not doing what they've been
they're
told.
They're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. That's right. If you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. Have you ever... I remember I worked out at Sun Refinery. I was a young guy. I was only 18 years old when I worked in that refinery. And I did everything in it there was to do in there. But a lot of it was welding and working out in the hot sun. And I did jobs that nobody else wanted to do. I wanted to learn how to weld real well. So I'd go and weld inside of these towers and stuff. It just about killed me. It almost should have killed me. Going and working in some of the conditions that I work in. But there's something really weird that I learned about people out there. Jim, come on out and rest a little bit. I'll come in there and help you. I'll go do your job for a little while. I'd come out there and I'd go get a soda pop, sit down, or a glass of water, and I'd sit down, and here comes Wallace. How you doing? I'm doing all right. Is that what you've been doing all day? The guys in there, oh, I'm come out here just working up a storm, you know, like that, oh, hi, so-and-so. I've been working myself to death all day long. So from then on, after several times of this, especially with certain people, I finally just said, when they said, let me spell you, I said, all right, I'm enjoying what I'm doing. Just keep on going. And you ought to see them scurry like rats when the mouse is clear, you know, near. That's the way people are. These people, the sin in their lives was why they were afraid of God. The sin in their lives, the practice. What have these people been doing? Hard-headed, bad-headed people. Moses put a veil over his face. Even the presence of God, as they looked at Moses, convicted them of their sins and that fear. They didn't want to be around him. Have you ever been known as a Christian and certain people didn't want to be around you anymore? In your family, different things they didn't want to be around you because you convicted them of things that they were doing? They didn't want to be around you anymore? What did Jesus say in some of those stories would say, those that have lost friends and mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters for my sake. And but whenever Moses went in before the Lord to speak with him, he would take off the veil until he came out. And whenever he came out and spoke to the sons of Israel, what he had commanded. And the sons of Israel would see the face of Moses, that the skin of Moses' face shone, so Moses would replace the veil over his face until he went to speak to him. Moses assembled, in verse chapter 35, then Moses assembled all the congregation of the sons of Israel and said to them, "These are the things that the Lord has commanded you to do. For 6 days' work may be done, but on the seventh day you shall have a holy day, a Sabbath, complete rest to the Lord. Whoever does any work on it shall be put to death." Let's look at this word, Sabbath. Sabbath. It's actually plural. Sabbath. Plural word. Unusual. Why in the world would that word Sabbath, that's plural? You can see the ending on it. For those of you that know some Greek. It's a plural word. What in the world does that word mean? You should translate the word Sabbath. Really? If you translate it correctly, literally over into English. But what does it mean? What is a Sabbath? Seventh day. It represents the last day of 7 days. It means a unit of 7 days. Plural. 7 days. It's the last day. Seventh day. And what day of the week is it? Saturday. The Sabbath has always been Saturday. People try to change it in history to Sunday, but Sunday is not the Sabbath. Saturday is the Sabbath. But we have a problem with that anyway. Who is our Sabbath? Jesus is our rest. He is our Sabbath. When Jesus died on the cross of Calvary, what happened to the Sabbath day? It was abolished. It was nailed to the cross. It was done away with. The Sabbath typified what? They had to rest on the Sabbath day. When it comes to salvation, you've got to rest in Jesus. You cannot work for part of your salvation and get grace for part of it. It's either all of works or all of grace. All of works nullifies it. All of grace is God's will. That's taught from the book of Genesis all the way through the book of Revelation. Salvation is by grace and grace alone. Saturday. When Saturday came, all Israel set out. Trust. When Saturday came out in the wilderness, what was Israel supposed to do on the day before the Sabbath? What did Israel eat out in the wilderness?
Yeah, everything what they eat for that day for
the manna or the quail or whatever they were supposed to do. That they were supposed to on that Friday, they were supposed to go out and gather enough food for 2 days. Because they weren't going to gather food on the Sabbath or Saturday. If they did, they died. So you go out and you gather the food, and you trust me, this food's going to last you for 2 days now. Those that gathered too much wouldn't have too much, and those that didn't gather enough would still be supplied. Some of God's children work more than others don't. Some people that are children of God are extremely zealous. And other ones are downright sluggards. Just downright sluggards. They drag themselves along in their spiritual life, but they're born again. And God whips them all the way. Just spanks their little bottoms. All the way. He has to. This is the way it is. And what this teaches there, in that Old Testament teaching, is that you're going to have enough. Salvation is good enough. That Sabbath, you're going to have enough to eat tomorrow without working. Because that seventh day is Tuesday. the Lord's day. That's the day that was set aside for you to remember Jehovah. Remember the salvation of Israel. Who took Israel out of Egypt? It was Jehovah God that took them out. Who passed over Egypt that night when it was black? Jehovah passed over, not an angel. The angel, the death angel, did not pass over. It's Jehovah that passed over. All right? Jehovah is our Passover. He is the one that secures us and saves us during that Passover. Passover.
I tell you, preaching using the angel of death.
Yeah, the angel of death. I heard that preached so many times. You're not going to find that in the Bible.
Jesus said here in Mark, the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath.
That's right.
He also said, therefore, the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath.
He is the God of the Sabbath. Jesus, why was Jesus called the Son of Man?
It is physically related to the flesh, right?
He had to be related to us to redeem us. Didn't he? Could somebody check and see how the thing was doing out there lately? About how they're what?
They're starting to sing.
Oh, sing the last song? Okay. I don't want you to go out and disturb them. I'm kind of hanging around here for a little bit. I can't hear them too good. This coffee pot over here is working my ears over. Coffee pots. Anyway, Jesus is our Sabbath. The word Sabbath means a week. Also.
It's interesting on the millennial Sabbaths.
I tell you what.
Sabbath.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thing, if you'll see the covenant people, what we call the covenant believers today, that in the what we call a covenant, strong Presbyterian churches, some of that type of thing, they will try to take the word Sabbath and try to change it to Sunday. And they'll take it and say, well, it doesn't do this. Well, they're not translating the word Sabbath correctly. Sabbath means 1 week. What is the first day of the week?
Sunday.
The first day of the Sabbath. What's the first day? Now, let's translate it this way. What's the first day of the Sabbath?
Sunday.
The first day of the Sabbath or the new week is Sunday. Yes, sir. All right. But it's not the Sabbath. It never will be. The Sabbath is Saturday. But the Sabbath was nailed to the cross of Calvary when Jesus Christ died. Because He is our Sabbath. He is our rest. We have to rest in Him for salvation. There's none other thing that you can do to get saved besides trust in the blood of Jesus Christ. That is all.
Didn't the Pope change it also?
That Pope changed it one time. Pope changed it, but didn't do any good because...
No, I mean,
you can say anything you want to say, but you go. We believe in the Bible, don't we? We believe what the Bible teaches, and the Sabbath will never be Sunday. It'll always be Saturday.
When it talks about Israel at rest, or the Jews at rest, they've never been at rest ever, but they will rest on the millennium.
Yes.
The Sabbath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is the Sabbath. That millennial reign is the Sabbath. You know, God told Israel also another thing when it comes to the Sabbath. I don't know. When Israel would not observe the Sabbath year of letting their land go fallow, God told Israel, you, the sixth year, you're going to get so much grain and so much whatever, so much grapes, so whatever you want to get on your crops, that you don't have to farm the seventh year. And He made them do that. And they were supposed to trust in Him. But some of them were greedy.
Mm-hmm.
What's for salvation much? That's what was
exactly.
The type of it.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. It's the type of it. Same story. Study that as you go. Let me dismiss you in prayer today. Brother Bill, would you dismiss us in prayer, please, brother?
Lord, we thank you for this precious opportunity to be here again today, Lord, that you might just bless us and know our health problems, Lord, each one of us that's here today, Lord, that we might have learned something that we can take out and share with other people, Lord, which is the big picture. Pray, Father, you will go with us and guide us, bless us, Lord, here each day this week, Lord, as you send us your Christ's holy name.
Amen. Amen.